If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks for closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the light and love of the Most Radiant One. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command. This evening our topic is the quest for the self, Kundalini activation, and self-realization. The questions that everyone at some point in their life, especially as they near the end of their incarnational journeys here, the questions they all seem to ask are, who am I? Why am I here? What is my purpose? What is my destination? And how am I to get there? So let me ask you just to begin. And when I ask each of these three questions, they're going to be different ones, answer within your mind. Just notice what your answer is. What time is it? Where are you? Who are you? Now, your answers to these three questions will reveal where you are currently focused in consciousness. Hidden and veiled beneath all the things you thought you were, your real self awaits your discovery. So let's take a deep breath. And we ask that any veil that could be lifted tonight be lifted. And we give ourselves full permission to see whatever is for us to see tonight. We ask that any opening, any revelation, any clearing, any release that could be lifted and dissolved through grace, that that take place. And we place our whole evening tonight in the ordering of perfect right action for the highest good of each person listening. So as an exercise, later on when I'm off the air and you're quietly in your room, you might want to try this. Take your journal and ask yourself, who am I? And then keep writing down every single thing that comes to your mind. Whatever it is, keep asking that question, who am I? And keep asking and asking and asking until you have exhausted every possible answer you can think of. And then every now and then throughout your day, if you wish, if you choose, you might stop and ask yourself, who am I? Catch yourself in the middle of a traffic jam or when you're rushing off to attend to some errand. Begin to ask yourself, who am I? The most inopportune moments, to begin to bring to your attention your reality so that you don't get swept into the flow of daily events to where you lose conscious awareness of who you truly are. This is something that we practice as modern-day yogis and mystics, living in the midst of the greatest initiation school ever, the modern 21st century. So let's just take that on board, and we're going to look at what it is to enter into conscious God realization. Each person enters life fully equipped to meet and master the conditions of this incarnation. You're always up to the task life demands you to face. And you are never given more than you can handle. That's a spiritual principle. So really, your only choices once you've incarnated is in how you choose to react and respond to each event and your attitude. And just note how there is always a sense of peace when you are doing something that you are divinely meant to do. You will seldom even think to question when you are in that perfect flow for you. So lessons learned and mastered are whatever is easy for you to do. Your talents, gifts, and natural abilities were things that you've mastered previously. So you may not be called to go back into them in this life. But those things that test, try, and challenge you are the areas you are to learn to face and master this time around. Are there any shortcuts, you might ask, to that high peak of self-realization? Well, if you're an old soul, you may find that you have so many skills and abilities that you've acquired, and you may be good at doing so many things, that settling down to a specific occupation or focus for your talent may not be easy for you. Sometimes it's really challenging, for example, to decide what you want to major in college. So a characteristic of an old soul is this very absence of specialization. And often an old soul will change occupations many times in their life, and sometimes they will live a series of many lifetimes and adopt various lifestyles in different cycles of their life, in the present life. But just know that whatever you do or don't do, you are on a path guaranteed to fulfill your life plan and destiny. You will not even be allowed to die unless you are finished with what you set forth for this embodiment. Thus, no one dies without their full consent and sanction at a higher level. How many near-death experiences have we heard where the person was sent back and a voice told them, it's not your time yet, you must return. So we know that many, many people report this. And even a person that tries to commit suicide, if that's not part of that karmic flow, they will be sent back. Even people who try to abort a fetus, that that's not part of their particular destiny, or karmic lesson or whatever, they will not be able to abort that fetus. So there's a certain preset rightness about your life, which once you get that, it takes a whole weight of worry and concern off your shoulders. There are no accidents, no coincidences, and nothing that just happens to you without your agreement at some level. You will meet everyone you are destined to meet at just the perfect time. And you will have every experience and opportunity for you to experience everything you desire with no exceptions. In fact, you must have your desires fulfilled upon whichever level you have generated them. So if you have earthly desires, then you must return to this earth or a similar planetary life zone to experience the fulfillment of your desires. So that is exactly why all spiritual disciplines teach discrimination between the real and the unreal, the eternal and the temporal, light and darkness, dharma or right action, and karma or binding action. The price of self-realization is the dauntless vigilance and courage to look at yourself without glamour, without self-deception, without illusion, and without fear. Clearly, to see all of your ego games, the patterns of deceit, self-importance, self-justification, and all of your patterns for what they are. without taking your personal self so seriously. You simply look to see what patterns you are habitually running as unconscious preconditioning. And you wake up to your false self and integrate your true self. In fact, as you wake up to your false self, that very act causes the true self to be unveiled. So your life is the greatest study, you know, over the temples of ancient times. You had the sign that read, "Man, know thyself, to thine own self be true." And so the whole process of self-realization is to realize who you are, what you are, why you are, where you are, how you are, and your purpose and destination. Now, every experience that you've ever had or ever will have is already encoded in your RNA, DNA, in your blood, and physically set in the grooves of your brain and marked in the irises of your eyes and nestled all along your nervous system. In fact, the one person you can never get away from is yourself. So self-importance is the very first requirement. You simply have to come at some point to accept yourself unconditionally as you are in whatever condition you find yourself, and you just take it from there. So there's no right way to do it or wrong way to do it. There simply is the way you do it. And it's always perfect for you based on who you are, where you are, and what's going on with your life. So your areas to address, handle, and manage, and master, will be found wherever you have avoided confronting or have shrunk from facing due to fear or whatever. Whatever is an issue, or where you have locked into a negative attitude or a judgment, that is what you are meant to face and forgive, and basically to make peace with. So how can you tell if an area, relationship, or situation is clear and free of any further karmic indebtedness? You are free of any further karmic tie if the area, relationship, or situation is no longer an issue. Something that's no longer an issue will no longer come into your mind. Or, if it does, you just feel neutral about it or at peace with it. So you only truly have karma with yourself, within yourself, even though others may seem to be participating in the area. So you've all, I think, heard the saying, "Let sleeping tigers lie." So if it's not an issue and no longer comes to mind, you are in a place of peace and clarity regarding it. Leave it alone and don't attempt to create a relationship where it presently doesn't exist. This applies to long-lost relatives, old school chums, former lovers, birth parents, missing siblings. If you are destined to meet them, you will. And if there is unfinished karmic business with them, they'll appear. So you don't have to go looking for more than is currently on your plate. So always check before you get involved in any area or with any person or situation, and check and see, is it really your area of concern? And it's only your area of concern if it is an issue for you. So the issue is the issue. If there's no issue, there's no issue. And that's not double talk. That's just the way it is. So try to keep your life as uncluttered as possible That is, if you want the step free, try to keep it simple so that you don't have these have-tos and shoulds and social obligations and personal attachments if your quest is self-realization and self-mastery. You just prioritize so that you keep your life as function-focused as possible. Now, you perhaps have heard the term kundalini. You may not know what it is. The kundalini is the effect of your spiritual striving. It's the current of your spiritual aspiration that begins to awaken and synergize and synthesize all of your chakras. It involves progressively clearing each of your centers of consciousness, which you call your chakras, the releasing of any kind of blockages and preconditioned energetics within your nervous system, and the preparing of your entire physical temple to be fully indwelt by the divine spirit, which is the whole purpose of your incarnation, is to host the Lord of hosts. So the kundalini is not about doing exorbitant yogic feats that somehow have powers and abilities, although with the opening and blossoming of kundalini, if you've been a yogi in the past or have had extraordinary powers, these things may surface temporarily. But the greatest power that a spiritual life presents is unconditional love. You are made of love. You've come from love. The warp and woof of your reality is only love. In fact, you are an emissary of love. That's your only purpose, your only function, and your only requirement to graduate from this particular earth school. So the living love is the yoga of, the yoga that is the only yoga to really focus upon. That being said, I personally have gone through all of these things I'm going to be sharing tonight, and a few that I haven't put in because they're a bit bizarre. But suffice it to say that you may have some, none, or all of these things because everybody is so very, very individual. But let's just have an overview of them, and then if you've had the experience, you can have some understanding, and you won't have the fear and concern. Recently, several people have been emailing me about different things that they're going through, and everything that they describe was a kundalini episode, but they didn't know that that's what it was, so it was frightening to them. So kundalini activation can occur at any time, especially if one has been meditating, doing breathing exercises, yoga, or has received Shaktipat initiation from a spiritual teacher. What is Shaktipat? Shaktipat is an impartation of spiritual activation that you receive from a person who carries that particular energy. We could also call it an activator. It's an activational energy. In fact, when we were with Baba Muktananda many years ago, he used to touch you on the top of the head with a bundle of peacock feathers. And when he did that, his shakti, his spiritual power, went into and activated your kundalini. So perhaps some of you listening to this show have had the experience of a Shaktipat transmission. The successor, I forget her name now. She was Malti. When I knew her, she now carries the lineage of the Siddha Yoga group. She does Shaktipat initiation. Guru Mai, that's what she's called. So it's not necessary to have Shaktipat initiation from a spiritual teacher, but if you have, then chances are you have already experienced some, if not all, of the things I will be sharing this evening. First of all, do not attempt to force the opening of Kundalini, as it can lead to psychosis and other physical and mental health problems. This is extremely important. One of the negative symptoms of Kundalini, when it is not channeled appropriately and you're not under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual teacher who can really appropriately direct you, is that it causes what we might call megalomania, which is when a person becomes absolutely obsessed with who they think they are. They can take that Kundalini power, and it goes into the ego when there hasn't been sufficient purification, and it just wreaks havoc. And I personally know of a man who was so intent upon having spiritual power and of being the greatest soul that ever lived. I mean, he just couldn't stand the thought of not being the greatest one ever, that he went mentally insane. So this is not an energy that you fool around with. If you are destined to have the Kundalini opened, you will know what I'm talking about, and you will already be under the guidance of a bona fide teacher, or you will in some way have that protection around you. So don't try to open your Kundalini by yourself. If it opens, fine. If it doesn't, leave it alone. Every fruit knows the time when it is to be picked and ripened. So one needs to be under the supervision of a bona fide teacher, fully self-realized and experienced in Kundalini management. And in some instances, you really need to be in a pure, remote, natural environment. For example, never try to do breathing exercises when you live in a polluted city. And be very careful about the practices that you undertake. If you live in a very congested urban area where there's just a lot of mixed energies and stuff going on, be careful. I know my teacher, when we lived in Las Vegas, would never allow us to meditate longer than 5 minutes at a time, because at that time they were doing the nuclear testing nearby. And she said there was far too much radioactivity for us to sit in meditation, which increases the radioactivity within the cellular structure of the body, but through light rather than atomic power. But it is similar, actually. So here are some of the things that I've experienced and also seen others experience in terms of the Kundalini as it awakens. For more information, I highly recommend the books of Baba Muktananda and the Siddha Yoga Foundation. It's very good, for example, discourses that you can order that I took many years ago that were excellent. And he has translated from the Hindi and Sanskrit some of the books on Kundalini activation you can't get anywhere else. And also, he has described his own experience in his book, The Play of Consciousness. So, bearing in mind the best path for this particular age is to do your duty in life with love, offer the fruits to God, and to repeat the name of the Lord as a mantra with love. That is the best yoga for this time. And it would be a combination of bhakti yoga, the yoga of devotion, or Raja Yoga, which is the Ashtanga or the Eightfold Path that Patanjali wrote about. And these are very safe paths for this particular age and for just about everybody in the world. So one of the things that catalyzes your Kundalini episodes will be dreams and visions, very often of snakes, especially cobras. I had the experience of where I had a dream where a very large cobra crawled right up my back and placed its hood over the top of my head and inserted the fangs into my third eye.
And, of course, that's a really classic Kundalini dream. But I've also had many, many dreams of snakes, all kinds of snakes, and many, many cobra encounters. Those are almost invariably Kundalini dreams. Next, you'll have the physical kriyas, which are spasmodic jerks and shudders and involuntary movements of the body. Some people will go into automatic yogic positions, which are called asanas, or they'll go into automatic yogic breathing, which is called pranayama. And people who have been yogis recently will often find themselves doing these things, and it looks very strange, and if you don't know what's going on, you're going to be a little concerned, I think. But these are just simply the body and the spiritual energy making room through clearing the nervous system, clearing the physical cellular memory and the things that we have conditioned in our consciousness. It's clearing and making way for that pure energy to anchor within you. Along with this, heart palpitations are extremely common. We originally were dual-hearted beings. The Syrians, and we were fathered by the Syrians originally, they had two hearts. Currently, we have a spiritual heart and, of course, our physical heart. And the two of them are beginning to synergize in vibration. And as they adjust to one another and the aura of each of them begins to overlock and overlay and form a vesica Pisces, that's the two circles that overlap and form a third point in the center, circle in the center. When they do that, the anomalies in the two heart patterns cause the sensation of palpitation. This, in most cases, will gradually dissipate and balance itself out. So if you don't have a history of heart trouble, I wouldn't worry about it. But take into consideration, it may be attributed to your Kundalini process. Also, when you're seated, say for example in meditation or just in a chair, when the Kundalini energy is moving in you, your body may sway back and forth or side to side or in a circular movement. And I think in almost every world faith, we find different body postures that are common to that faith. For example, the Sufis and the Jews, they will be davening, moving back and forth, and the whirling dervishes, and even in almost every religion, you'll see different body movements that people go through when they're praying, and this is symbolic of the movement of the spiritual energies, the Kundalini, as it activates and moves in your body. Likewise, you may feel exalted emotions of love and devotion, and your heart will sometimes feel like it's swelling until you think it's going to burst from the love that fills you. Also, some people who have a lot of heavy drama in their astral body, they may have episodes of negative emotions. Anger may flare, or bad temper, or cycles in which negative desires, inclinations, whatever is in there that's not part of the divine flow is going to be burned away, consumed, brought to light, and dissolve through the action of the Kundalini within you. So whatever comes up when you have made a conscious commitment to the spiritual path, you can just take it as part of the process of your spiritual unfoldment. one of the things that almost everyone experiences, when you're deeply touched spiritually, you'll find yourself weeping easily. You may find yourself very inspired. And at times when you're just so filled with love and gratitude and joy, or you may not even know why, you may weep and sob for no reason, simply because you're so filled with a sense of immensity, the immensity of being. It just catches you up in this very, very special above, B-H-A-V, above up, is a divine mood. So all of these things I'm describing constitute a path of yoga. Yoga is that which draws you into union with the divine. So all of these moods and things that come up for you when you're on a spiritual path are part of your devotion to God. They're part of the divine moods that come over you when you are caught up in divine consciousness. Likewise, you may see visions and have really beautiful dreams of God and the saints and avatars, masters, Jesus, episodes of light. You may see an inner sun behind your closed eyes that's so bright that sometimes it stays with you even when you open your eyes. In fact, they're often the houses I'm in, they're dark, and people will come in and they'll say, "Why don't you turn on the lights?" But I have so much light in my head, I can't always tell when it's dark in the room, because for me, it's always very bright within me. So that would be, again, a simple example of the third eye being opened and seeing the inner sun of the divine higher consciousness. So you also may feel extremely sensitive to cold and drafts, especially at your throat or your upper torso area. So your head and shoulders may feel better if you have on a cap or a shawl. In fact, you'll notice the yogis pile their long dreadlocks in a top knot on their head, or they'll wear a yarmulke type of cap or a turban. And that's for the purpose of protecting the crown chakra, which gets extremely sensitive when it's opened. The awakened crown chakra should not have direct sunlight on it. The sun in our solar system has harmful rays for the higher consciousness. So I know many people tell you to meditate on the sun, but really what they are to meditate on is the inner sun, not the outer sun in our solar system, which has harmful radiatory effects coming from it, which are not good for the crown chakra or the solar plexus. So those two areas should be covered. And I think that's why the people in India, especially the yogis, stay indoors during the heat of the day and they take a nap after their lunch. And another thing they do is wear fragrant flower gardens, garlands, or leis, you know, they look like the Hawaiian leis. And the fragrance of the flowers helps to absorb some of the yogic fire that you feel coursing through your body. Your body gets really hot. And so whatever you can do to keep your body comfortable and cool is appropriate. Lighted candles and incense are of a very pure and high floor quality are also very helpful. Menthol atum, like, for example, Vicks Vapor Rub, is good to put on, for example, your solar plexus or the soles of your feet or areas where you're feeling a great deal of fire. I know when the chakras in my palms were opening, my hands would get so fiery hot that I would have to take a jug of ice water and put my hands in it. I remember many times opening my refrigerator and sticking my head in the freezer. The fire just gets so intense when you're first awakening spiritually to the Kundalini. So, you know, you do what you do to keep yourself comfortable and balanced. Now, a small amount, like a quarter of a teaspoon of bicarbonate of soda stirred into warm milk is extremely beneficial if you feel yourself just like you're going through solar flares. That's what I call it, where your body is just is so hot and you can't sleep and you feel really uncomfortable. That will help to balance the fire. It's important to eat regularly when you have your Kundalini activated. Otherwise, you'll get the worst pounding headache in your crown chakra. I often say that the yogic fire is eating my head, so it's important to eat regularly. Especially Indian, vegetarian, and Ayurvedic type of diet. The Ayurvedic system, which is the Indian medicinal system, is designed to cooperate with the function of your particular type and your particular spiritual constitution to make the optimum use of your physical instrument. So the Indian culture is the oldest in the world. It's at least 10,000 years old, and they have a great wisdom about the spiritual life and what is best to enhance it. Ghee, that's clarified butter, is extremely good for a person that's undergoing Kundalini. Milk products, buttermilk, fruits, vegetables, and quality grains are especially good for Kundalini, and oranges. So if you're a meat eater, gradually meat you'll find will tend to fall away, and you'll start to go more to the poultry and the fish. And then if you're guided, and it depends very much on where you're living, the type of work you're doing, and what the spirit within you is guiding you to do, you may wish to go vegetarian entirely. But that is not something that's required of everyone, and it is the ideal if that's what you can handle. For some of us, it's a little bit too refined. I find it extremely difficult to stay here on this earth, so I have to kind of find ways to densify myself. But that may not be your problem. So whatever works for you, you know, be very attuned to what makes you operate at your best level. Your Kundalini in the early stages causes you to feel extremely uplifted and inspired artistically. And during that cycle, you may find yourself composing poems, music, dancing, singing, writing, speaking in divine tongues, dancing in ecstatic trance dances, falling out or fainting under the power of the Holy Spirit. Or sometimes you become fixed in a seemingly frozen position where you can't move. You're just transfixed in a trance state. Sometimes you just want to worship and adore God. And you find yourself extremely attracted to all the devotional practices that enable you to be in a congregational situation of divine worship. Bhajans, you know, sankirtan, choral singing, all of that is very good when you're in that stage. So, likewise, one may experience chills. The body may have a sensation of where the hair is standing on end. Sometimes you just try to say the name of God and your whole body will start to shake and tremble. You may start to weep. Your hair may just feel like it's crawling and standing up. Goosebumps, these are all symptoms of Kundalini. Again, the quaking of the body, there was many groups that are called the Quakers and the Shakers and the Holy Rollers. those are all reactions to the Kundalini. And this is all part of what happens as the nervous system is being cleared and cleansed. And you're being prepared for greater light, consciousness, integration. I had extreme pain in the crown chakra when my crown chakra opened. I think I told you in a previous show, I was with Sai Baba at the time, and the pain in the top of the crown chakra, it felt like there was a stake being driven down through the center of my head. And I had to just stay down in bed and keep cool during that period of time. And it fortunately passed quickly. I also noticed that I went through several months in which I had an oil spot right in the center of my head where there is the kundalini was activated. It made that spot on my head oily. And really had to wash my hair, just that spot on top of my head, every day, or it looked messy. Standing in the shower and just letting cool water run on your crown chakra is really helpful when you have a hot, feel heat in the head and lots of pain. And again, make sure that you have something good on your stomach. You have to eat a little bit, you know, some oil and some sweets when you have kundalini. The head also becomes extremely sensitive to touch. You don't like people gesturing towards your head. You don't like your head touched. Becomes very sensitive. Another area is that your eyesight will shift. You'll have blurred vision sometimes. You'll be seeing objects before you sway or waver or even dissolve in light. You have many, many visual light episodes as the kundalini awakens. You may start to see into other dimensions, like there's, you can see through objects or energy around objects, or it'll be like you can see through people's or other solid forms. You can see right through them. There may be other paranormal events and perceptions. Some hear inner music. There may be chords, chanting, angelic choirs. You may hear the voice of the silence, the inner master, ringing, buzzing, chimes. All sorts of different sounds occur as the light impacts those inner nerve currents in the body and the brain and the mind. You may have alternating sensations in your physical sense of self. For example, you may feel yourself very, very tall. And then you may feel yourself contract, or you feel very, very small and condensed. And these are extensions and contractions of your subtle bodies of light as they extend multidimensionally and also as you become more grounded physically. You may have spontaneous out-of-body projection. Many of you will soul travel, which is different, a little bit different, because you don't in soul travel, you don't look back and see your body in the bed. That's usually astral projection. Soul travel, you move up to the living word of the sound current within you, and you connect to the soul in higher divine states of awareness. You also may experience profuse perspiration. I remember we were living in Santa Barbara at the time, and it was very, very cool there, seldom more than about 70, 75 degrees even in the summer. And the perspiration would absolutely pour off of me and run down the sides of my body like rivers. And this was part of the kundalini activation that I experienced after I went to see Sai Baba. So you may find heat throughout your body or hot spots, particularly when you have been meditating and soul traveling out of your body. And you come back in your body, it's like a blast furnace. Your body will feel really hot, particularly at the base of the skull, the back of the neck, or if you've been bent in any position, you'll feel heat in different spots of your back. So what's very helpful when you have a lot of heat in the body is milk, milk products, ice cream, and limeade. Very helpful for yogic fire. And probably lemonade, too. So another thing that happens is that you may experience alternating mood swings. And these are when emotional kriyas or purificatory movements are occurring in your astral body. So these are serving the purpose of clearing conditioned energy patterns and emotional blockages from your nervous system and your solar plexus and your lower chakras. This is when negative moods might come up and things of that nature. The dark night of the soul occurs when the light of the soul floods the lower consciousness and temporarily stuns it, just like when you would go into a very, very dark room and you can't see. You know, when you come from the light and you go into a dark room, you can't see. That happens when the light of the soul begins to flood the lower personality. You're blinded temporarily, not physically in your physical sight, but inwardly. You feel like you're in an abysmal pit of darkness. And often depressions, terrible depressions, will come in at that point. I went through 2 months of that myself right after I came back from Sai Baba. And my teacher, John Rogers, said it was the dark night of the soul. But once he explained what it was, it vanished. So he said it can become the bright day of the soul once you understand what's going on with it. Now, you also have in your spiritual path your mountain peak experiences, which give you a vision, and then you have to do the trek up the side of the mountain. So the inner master will always give you a vision of where you're headed, and then you'll fall back down to the base of the mountain, and you will have to slowly make your way up the mountain. As you make your way up the mountain, there will be certain resting places and plateaus where you feel like you've got the world by the tail, and everything is well, and everything is flowing, and you think you've got it made, only to find yourself down in the next valley. So you will find cycles in which you it's just like climbing a mountain. And you'll have periods in which there's apathy, and you just feel flat. No matter what you do, you can't seem to break through into those warm fuzzies that you've become in the early stages of the path so accustomed to. So just know when you have the apathy and the flat periods to ignore them and just keep going. Just do your spiritual practice and keep moving through it and don't pay much attention to all of these things because they will all pass. None of these things are going to last very long. So when you're in the emotional bodies, clearing them, you'll go through great periods of englamorment. Englamorment is when you have an intense emotional attachment to some particular state. And it's all full of, you know, razzle-dazzle, and you're all attached to this particular thing. And it clouds your vision. You can't see clearly when you're englamored. Then when you move into the mental kriyas, or the mental purifying areas, you will experience sometimes intense inner conflicts and confusion because the mental plane is full of illusions. And in the following after these illusions, of course, you will have disillusion. So the mental plane is very challenging, and the way to get through the mental plane is to keep chanting a mantra, to ignore your thoughts and keep focusing on the name of the Lord, which the very vibration of the mantra will transmute the illusions and the confusions and the conflicts. You don't have to do anything about them. Just keep the mantra going, and it will transmute all of that. Then you go through stages of curious detachment and lack of interest or even aversion to the things of this world. And again, that's a reaction. And will pass away in time, so don't get too fixated on it. Along with this will become a greater sense of clarity, insight, revelation, and the ability to know the innermost heart and intention of all those around you. Suddenly you can just see and know whatever you turn your attention towards. You become sensitive for a period of time, very sensitive to light, loud sounds, even music. But this will disappear in time as well with further integration. So it's like you get real sensitive. And then after a while, nothing bothers you. You just kind of balance it all out. So there's a general refinement of all of one's senses and tastes and expressions that occurs, which would include psychic sensitivity to spiritual realms, spiritual beings, spiritual you're just sensitive to everything, and you learn to discern, you know, discern, and to tell what is real and what is an illusion. So the sensitivity initially to vibrations and feelings sometimes makes you feel clogged energetically or drained sometimes in the early stages. You know, if you go into very congested stores or malls or theaters, sometimes you just feel like you're being suffocated. So there's a time and a cycle when you don't do that much. You kind of protect your instrument. And then later you become like a Mack truck. You can go anywhere. Doesn't bother you. I'm in that stage now where, I can walk in anywhere, any place, and my aura is so strong it doesn't affect me anymore. But I used to walk into stores and almost pass out, you know, from the vibration of the different thought forms. So these are all stages you pass through as your body's being refined and attuned to house the presence of God all the time, which would be you as a spirit. So along with all these symptoms, there comes an ever-deepening love for God, love for people, and a loving reverence for all life. And your face, your whole face begins to glow, and your whole being seems to radiate light and joy. You almost never not see that on the face of a mystic. They just glow. So you also tend to see the good and the divine and the pure and the holy radiating from everyone. And you live an inspired and uplifted and uplifting creative life. So the quality of your experience of life becomes so exquisite that you really, for the first time, start to live. You really open up to life, and everything just takes on a greater beauty. Nature reveals its innermost secrets to you. And suddenly all your questions cease, and you are enraptured and caught up in the divine presence. And you become still, just like the little bee that's drinking the nectar. It becomes very still and quiet. And a great inner peace and joy proclaims and affirms the success of your spiritual progress and path. So whenever you experience great inner peace and joy, you know that whatever you're doing spiritually is really working for you, so you keep doing it. And you gradually become very impersonal, and this replaces the former attachment and drama of taking things personally. And you move from a sense of centered composure and inner strength, and you become the silent knower, no longer finding it necessary to explain or defend yourself and express your personal opinions. And you don't even engage in social chit-chat anymore or superficial exchanges because you've allowed yourself to be the fullness of your divine being. And that is the joy of the awakened Kundalini. And you walk in the light of your own inner knowing, and you no longer seek or desire anything in this world, for you have completely yielded to the divine and total trust in the divine and perfection of whatever unfolds in you, through you, as you, and around you. And you find that everywhere you look is the face of God. When you look in the mirror, when you look at another, when you look outward into the world, and truly all is well. You have become the kingdom of God. You have become the raptured state. You have become the awakened Christ conscious being. And you have entered the world and made it new. You have, behold, made all things new. So you are the means for the importation of the golden age that you have sought to see exemplified upon the earth. It enters with you, beloved. So let's take a deep breath and go out with a nice series of three shantis. Deep breath. Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.
Peace and beauty and blessing and grace be upon you for this new year ahead. 2010. God bless you, Adonai.